train were white. The milkman was white. The mailman was white. Huh? The fireman was white. The policeman was white.
There's something strange about this meeting. He said, if you come, you're going to think God's talking to you.
There was a platform there upon which people, speakers from every nation, could stand and speak their mind without any limitation whatsoever.
Right by the Van Cortlandt Rangers. Nobody is wasting nobody. That is a miracle.
And we will all share it simultaneously, democratically, on television, if the powers that be are prevented from putting the new pictures in a drawer because we are not yet ready, in their view, to know.
Of violence and increasing amativeness. And the fun of going to the theater now is to sense the degree to which we are at crossroads of this kind, because in our own families, in our own culture, the crossroads become increasingly evident from one year to the next, and we question so many things that we wouldn't have dared to question before.
Which cannot be described, and they go into the realm of intuition. That's the, you know, that's what people say. That's all I can say. You know, there is no logical way to apprehend something which hasn't happened yet. You extend your logical ideas a certain point, but you know, I don't do that myself because I've tried it, and every time I've tried to extend my logical ideas and come to some conclusion I thought was going to happen, it didn't happen. You see, and it didn't happen enough times for me to begin to question whether that was a good idea.
Join it in full solidarity. Embrace it as our own, for we have a common enemy.
The letters were recovered at 10th Street and Greenwich. At this time, we have no arrests.
We've got the CBS offers. We get them frequently enough. And we don't know how to make a film or do TV and don't want to be cut in between two ads and the evening news, you know? Because then it's all appearance and it's not, you know, it's not what's really happening.
Saw what he saw and heard Vincent say, I tried to kill myself, but missed. Revu rushed to call Dr. Gachet, who hastily arrived with his 17-year-old son, one of the two last surviving persons to see Van Gogh alive. Monsieur Gachet remembers much. He remembers how his father examined the wound, how extraction seemed impossible, how he dressed it, how he left him on guard as he hastened to send word to Théo in Paris. Remembers Théo next day, sobbing as he entered the room, and Vincent saying,
"Do not cry. I did it for the good of everybody."
All day long, Théo sat with his brother, who to him seemed determined not to recover.
Whether you're someone to be trusted or whether you're a good authority figure, they're very other-oriented, and they need to learn to focus more on themselves as their own authority figures, and to act from their own beliefs and to trust themselves and put less energy into checking things out and more onto what they really want and creating what they want and having what they want.
I had the world's most sophisticated camera bolted to the spacecraft. Spacecraft can't even aim the camera. It has to move as a unit to aim this exquisite telescope that will be pointing down at Mars. But it will get us pictures. It will show us objects the size of this little circle of light from 1,000 miles up.
It set a new northern record, 83 degrees, 24 minutes, and 5 seconds, thereby taking it away from England. And I'll tell you how they made the record. Of course, they were the first ones to make really good use of the Eskimo dogs and sledges. What they did was to make a sledging expedition north from their base at Discovery Harbor. It was one of these trips that took them up there. But the reason they got so far was this. They established smaller bases, two of them, quite some distance out from the main base. What they'd do would be to send out teams with supplies of clothing and food and hide it several days' journey north of the main camp, leaving themselves just enough to return.
This police drama contains adult language. Viewer discretion is advised.
I just saw a crazy flying saucer.
Thank you. see you back, Jack, I still can't believe it. Whatever stunt you pulled to get back, I give you credit. And you were gone. I thought you were gone.
Huh?
I'm just saying, it's great to see you back. You okay, dear?
Yeah, I'm cool, thanks.
Well, this will take you to the top of the hour. I'll get out of your way. Good luck in your first show back.
Thanks.
Jack the Ripper on 101X. Yep, you heard it right. It's been a while. From the big city to the woods and back to the big city again. Did I ever tell you about the four songs in this world that make my heart stop every time I hear them? Well, if we're going to get to know each other again, I better fill you in. The first song is a request. A request I got a long time ago. Never got a chance to play.
Everybody knew that Jack was a big angelic genius. He'd already written On the Road and Dr. Sachs and Subterraneans and Mexico City Blues and Visions of Cody and many other works by 1955. And we'd all read them, so we knew it.
It was about the same time as this painting was conceived that Lementia McClure, myself, Philip Whalen, Gary Snyder, with Kenneth Rexroth as a moderator, got together and gave a reading at the Six Gallery in San Francisco, where I first read Howl, Kerouac in the audience, with Neil Cassidy in the audience, and presented here before the public for the first time like a united front of pure angelic poetry.
Resolution. Any doubting Thomases that remain will change their minds, I hope.
Simply everyone seeks oneness. Though such pursuit has many different names and draws each in so many mysterious, diverse, and ever-changing directions. Everyone seeks oneness, though many settle for the reverie of intoning the word, while others claim contentment in the inspiration of the idea held as ideal, just beyond one's grasp. And then there are those who somehow cannot settle or be content with the word or its ideal. They want to breathe it. They want to touch it. They want to be awash with it. They want to ground it in their being. Not to possess it, not to imprison it, but to ground it in their being, making oneness a part of who they are and are becoming. If you are such as those who do not settle, nor are complacent, ready yourself. Open to your vulnerabilities, both weak and strong. Acknowledge and forgive the former. Expose yourself to and accept the latter. align your intentions consciously with your subconscious and unconscious as well with your higher conscious self. You and your higher self aligned. That which is in between the subconscious and unconscious will come to line as well. Connect with your ether, the etheric of you and the etheric of nature. Open to the other and its mystery. Gather your body together as one. Opened, aligned, connected. Gather your experience and your knowledge. Create a body of being. Ready yourself. Connect with your alliances of courage and confidence. Connect with your alliances of co-creation, whatever they may be. Align with the portals, the ports of entry so familiar to you, and the ports of call, entry to which you now have authority and permission. And allow them to be gateways that can lead you to what you seek. Open to the protection and guidance encompassed in your spirituality. Oneness awakens. It calls you. Ready, follow the threads through the terrain, and you can find the mystery, diversity, and fluidity beyond a word, beyond an ideal, in the experience, in the magical, elevating, exhilarating experience of oneness. Be off. Explore. 6.
Never got a chance to play.
More onto what they really want and creating what they want and having what they want. Sixes get very energized often by going against something that they think is wrong. It's not so much from a moral vantage point, but it's more from the person not being a good authority figure. So you can support the six more to go for what they really believe in rather than to be motivated just by going against. For instance, if you think of the Vietnam era protest, it's interesting. You'll find many sixes were some of the people behind the war, and then a lot of the sixes would also can be on the other side of that and go against something that's really, when they discover it's really not the right authority after all.
Their minds, I hope, because they will see things that will boggle their minds if in fact this hypothesis is real.
Thank you. our tent. I was kind of looking up at the top of the tent, and he was looking across at the campfire outside. And this bright light came over us. I mean, it was very, very bright. It was like I was looking at a light bulb because it kind of blinded me. It was like, you know, it blinded me, but it didn't blind him because he wasn't looking exactly at it. And it lasted for about, I want to say, 3 or 4 seconds. And then it blinked twice and it went away.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked up at the sky and saw three round disc-shaped objects.
Incredibly ambitious unmanned set of missions, which will have rovers and landers with the rovers, balloons and orbiters, all taking pictures and data simultaneously.
Looking glass on the aurora's smelling glasses, could not stand to see what's intended to be. Ego laced out in to the bodies they stand surrendering here to the queen. Day, you're in the mirror and you cannot be what you see. You cannot be where you be. You cannot be what you see. You can never hold me. Looking glass down with your rose colored glasses could not stand to see what's intended to be. You go laced out in the to the bodies and stand you near to the queen. There you're in the mirror and you cannot believe what you see. You cannot believe where you be. You cannot believe what you see. You can never know me. You think you are me. I might think that it's pretty to see. You know it's stupid. Do you think you are?
Oh, my God. Thank you, thank you. Thank you so much. I see the 30 going. This Gods and Monsters is based on Chris Bram's novel Father Frankenstein, and it's a very faithful adaptation, so first I have to thank him. These actors sitting in front of me, Brendan, Ian, and Lynn, these geniuses who made this all work, this is yours. Thank you so much. I have to thank Greg Feinberg, Clive Barker, all my friends at Regent, Paul Collegeman, Mark Harris, and Steve Jarko, Flashpoint, BBC, Showtime, the great Lionsgate,
well this evening, but
we wouldn't
be
here without
Mark Erwin
and Tom Weinberg.
The first sign of blood and the pecking order among you will begin. God forbid that it should be I who reveal that blood. In any event, that tension, the tension that exists between audience and stage
critics
for both
from around the country, people like Peter Travers,
is not possible
who made
a
mission out of this movie.
There was nobody
of course,
there.
Most of all,
there was no failure
James
there.
Will.
Failure has been flipped out of existence.
60 years
what
ago,
we see is an agreed upon performance
back on
taking
him
place months
and even
years
before. On, living
we
the way
cannot
he wanted
be nourished
to, so,
by that. So we
Mr.
are at
Jimmy,
a thrilling moment
thank you.
In American theater, as I say, not only in New York, but everywhere. And the variety of theater that is now being produced in America is also thrilling. Nobody would have guessed that we could have so many converging paths of playwrights as we now have prepared for us, Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, and in all the
adulthood. I hope they execute him in the morning. I think he deserves to die for all the lives he ruined.
Living in the flesh, composers can't get 100 people to come to some of their events.
Well, first of all, I think it's we have to remember that these are theater pieces, or music theater pieces or operas. And to begin with, when you're working in the theater, you automatically have a larger audience. And we do well with the ensemble, too. But for a run of, let's say, 7 or 10 performances of an opera, really, it's theater audiences will come out in force for that. So it's partly my interest in theater and intermingling of the arts, so that I work a lot collaboratively with dancers, with designers, with directors. With theater, you get a real coming together of dance, images, spoken words, sung sometimes, whatever. Right now, there seems to be a real appetite for that. There's an interest on my part in working on works like that, but that corresponds to a real, I was...
Right back at it, howling and stamping and storming through. What I'm seeing, friends, is
It hurt to lose what I did, hurt bad. And mind this, too, there'll be worse yet, worse in the years to come.
Soldiers don't die, they fade into corporation offices.
Your saccades, the movement of your eye from one fixation point to another, and your return eye sweeps, the movement of your eye from the end of one line to the beginning of the next.
Secretary of State George Shultz went to Moscow to consult with Shevardnadze and Gorbachev on the INF talks, the Intermediate Nuclear Force Reduction talks. He took a piece of paper in his briefcase called the Space Cooperative Agreement that was very quietly negotiated last fall here in Washington and in Moscow. He and Shevardnadze signed that document, which has now put into law a sharing of data on Mars between the United States and the Soviet Union.
Was white. The only one that had any black was Spot, and he was black and white.
Here's a left-wing Zionist named Nathan Glazer would join the alcove. Contentious, each defending the purity of his own radical beliefs. They're united solely by their opposition to Soviet leader Joseph Stalin.
What does that mean?
It means whatever you want it to mean.
The children to go first. There was a lot of, like holding back.
Not to be feared. It is not to be feared. It's a friend. It's a friend. Please get us some medication. It's simple. It's simple. There's no convulsions with it. It's just simple. Just please get it before it's too late to tell you. Get moving. Get moving. Get moving.
Some of the mothers that were holding their babies, you know, they wouldn't. They wasn't letting them go. Some of the security people were just taking babies out of those mothers' hands.
The best thing you do to relax and you have no problem. You have no problem with the thing if you just relax.
From where I was standing, I can see that these kids was not drinking this stuff. You know, they were like spitting it out. You know, they were forcing this shit down these kids' mouth.
All the kids taking a drink to take to go to sleep. Keep your emotions down. Children, it will not. If you'll be quiet, if you'll be quiet.
This is the guy that, he was about 13 years old. His first name was Thurman. Thurman actually stumbled onto me, you know, and he was falling to the ground. And as he was falling, he began to convulse. Thurman died in my hand. And, he just, I knew then that this shit was real.
I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you. I'm the best friend you'll ever have. You'll regret it if you do, though you don't die. You'll regret it.
Turned to my right for whatever reason, and I saw my wife standing there with tears running down her cheeks, and she was holding her son, and a nurse was squirting poison in his mouth.
Well, it could be worse. You could be squirting poison in your own mouth. Talking through the ion confusion haze. See what I mean? The equivalent of independent film here at Z Radio Periphery Land. 90.3 of those Radio Land quantum leaping units, electron shells and things, mere bag of electron shells, as Jackie would say. Out of Newton, street legal now. After ungulant ingestion, that is. New Metaphysics, Gary Geiserman, I'm speaking to you now, and so forth. Strange things are happening in the meta world. You know that world, the in-between. The ever-inspanding present. The only part of time that has any chance of reality. Around here, right now, that is. Gary Geiserman, your real host. I'm real. A show that plays better in the future than it does in the present will ripen with unage. If I can get born as an artiste, my work will ascend in value, popping forth like a cashew coming out of the rainforest womb-like projection of the projection of the projection. Very sexual. And it's hot in that growing green ceiling in the very high auditorium of the rainforest. What's left of it? Until marijuana is made legal, that rainforest is in jeopardy, as we know. And of course, the oxygen of the planet Earth, much in value for its electron shells. I believe it's number 2 in count, and very versatile around carbon life forms. And even silicon growth forms, non-human. Kind of a dew line in consciousness. And I don't mean a directed energy weapon. I mean a dew line, an advanced warning system, externo sensoro operating membrane, perhaps. Somewhat analogous to the cobweb in the sky happening around now, like in Cisco, Pancho, for those old timers out there, where archivists of any age in the electron circus La Biblioteca. Do you read global corporate white man Earth? I don't want to leave anything out. The electron shell of things. The quantum unknown in science land. Scientists being the last to know. Although it's the media people who are the last to know and the first to tell you about it. We have to wait for a second. Pause and effect. Pause and effect. Bipolar dualistic monism happening now. Count off the Kozotama with me, friends. Don't worry, you understand it. Get your hands off yourself, leave yourself alone, and let the light organize itself for you. And nobody gets hurt. Counting out a lot of numbers in the financial markets these days. Stockholder heaven. I mean, lots of stock holding. I mean, the blade running world over your head. Unless you're a lucky dog. There are some lucky dogs around here. Speaking the language behind enemy lines, I think it's called. Unless you are the enemy. In quotes. I personally don't have that much trouble with the other, but I'm on the invisible side of the room and can't be seen or understood, so don't mind me. Of course, I can see me. And I am chafing at the electron shell. I am scratching. I am knocking like a poltergeist. Scaring the hell out of myself, be Jesus. So don't wander. Don't wander into the no-fly, get-killed zone. Ad hoc around you, like a homeless person in the third world underground. Could be anyone. Don't get caught under the crosshairs, my friend. You might get mowed down. Like, you might get oxidized at ouch out to here. Down the rabbit hole, sent scurrying. Where strange things are happening around here now. Those two electron shells, man, they are busy. And I don't mean the Rust-Oleum of the industrial age ending as we speak. I mean the new thing. So new, nobody has a clue or would be able to believe it if they did. Right now. Just click on number 3. I think it's the F button. It says the future. 20 or 30 years hence. That'll help bring it through the confusion meta layer and into a theater near you. Yeah, the whole fiber, the whole fabric, the whole ground is shifting. I want to thank the people who sent in pledged money last week. You were the 7-day message from Garcia. Garcia is in the is in commerce in the old world, a world I don't believe in anymore, and I mean that. Refugee, exile, all the good rock terms apply now. Fill in your name, please. 3 bozos coming on the show soon. Thanks a lot. Jake Bouvry, Mark Zielinski, Jonathan Ellis. You paid money, you get special privileges in that man's economy. I'm still, part of my left ass cheek is still in that world, so I will honor such a ridiculous concept. It's like an artist painting with a turd instead of with some nice brown oil paint that can be mixed. Instead, he's prey to some man's diet of the last 10 days. You know how it works. Don't get it ass backwards now. So those cats will be on the show soon, one at a time. We will have some sort of interfacing with them, and we'll see what happens. And thanks for everyone else who participated in the old economy of giving money. for things of value. I don't believe it, but when that left ass cheek got to go, you must believe, as it were. Don't mess with that one. Some concepts are just painted with too broad of a brush, as they say. But I have several men on the job, men and women, working on the new one. Something you can rest both cheeks on and get up in the morning with an innocence of initiative, if you will, and not be sorry. Forming now, the new economy. Post-capitalism, all right, you could say that. Capitalism being the communism of socialism, of the new thing in the opposite direction. So somehow we're going to get from here to there. This is since this is merely the shadow of the reality that lies ineffably under or beyond within time-space, we can know the answer well ahead of the question. That's the archetype. So we know that we are going to get there from here. This is known. Already done. We can have fun and watch and see how it evolves and develops. How pumpkin heads can change overnight, seemingly. Everybody get more spiritual. Everybody get smarter. Everything change ass backwards. Just the way you want it. Five two four six eight six for source material. So thanks again for sending in money. I appreciate it, and that's from the bottom of my heart and from both sides of my ass at the same time. Spoken like a true philosopher.
And after I saw this image of my son, my whole body, my whole psyche was overloaded. I couldn't, I'd almost gone past the point of even thinking, and was feeling so much that I couldn't feel anymore. It was just darkness. Thank you.
I'm an old man now, and a lonesome man in Kansas, but not afraid to speak my lonesomeness in a car, because not only my lonesomeness, it's ours all over America. Oh, tender fellows, and spoken lonesomeness is prophecy in the moon 100 years ago or in the middle of Kansas now. It's not the vast plains mute our mouths that fill at midnight with ecstatic language when our trembling bodies hold each other breast to breast on a mattress. Not the empty sky that hides the feeling from our faces, nor our skirts and trousers that conceal the body love emanating in a glow of beloved skin, white smooth abdomen down to the hair between our legs. It's not a god that bore us, that forbid our being, like a sunny rose all red with naked joy between our eyes and bellies. Yes, all we do is for this frightened thing we call love, want, and lack. Fear that we aren't the ones whose body could be beloved of all the brides of Kansas City, kissed all over by every boy of Wichita. Oh, but how many in their solitude weep aloud, like me, on the bridge over Republican River, almost in tears to know how to speak the right language. On the frosty broad road uphill between highway embankments, I search for a language that is also yours. Almost all our language has been taxed by war. Radio antennae high tension, wires ranging from Junction City across the plains, highway cloverleaf sunk in a vast meadow, lanes curving past Abilene to Denver filled with old heroes of love, to Wichita where McClure's mind burst into animal beauty drunk, getting laid in a car in a neon misted street 15 years ago, to Independence where the old man still alive who loosed the bomb that slaved all human consciousness and made the body universe a place of fear. Now, speeding along the empty plain, no giant demon machine visible on the horizon, but tiny human trees and wooden houses at the sky's edge, I claim my birthright, joy reborn after the vast sadness of the war gods. A lone man talking to myself, no house in the brown vastness to hear, imagining that throng of selves that make this nation one body of prophecy, language by declaration as pursuit of happiness. I call all powers of imagination to my side in this auto to make prophecy. All lords of human kingdoms to come, Shambhu Bharti Baba, naked, covered with ash, Kaki Baba, fat-bellied, mad with the dogs, Deharavaha Baba, who moans, oh, how wounded, Sitaramankar Das Thakur, who commands, give up your desire, Satyananda, who raises two thrums in tranquility, Kali Pada Guha Roy, whose yoga drops before the void. Shivananda, who touches the breast and says...
American Communist followers who made their home in Alcove 2. Members of the Young Communist League, and they must have numbered somewhere between 200 and 400, were forbidden to talk to us. I mean, literally forbidden by their organization to have a conversation.
We had one fellow who had a foghorn voice, and he would hold up a left-wing paper and yell, "Read about Stalin the Butcher." And they would become very aggravated and aroused, and sometimes we would just literally provoke them.
was white. The only one that had any black was Spot, and he was black and white. You got the little poison mushroom. But we got little Black Sambo and many other books that poison the minds of black people here in the hells of North America.
I remember once hearing a story about a little old lady, not one of your admirers, who was finally persuaded to attend a meeting you addressed in Brooklyn. She left the meeting saying with a little surprise and I suppose a lot of relief, "Why, Mr. Thomas is a gentleman." Did you ever, in those days, suffer any from ostracism from nice people?
Yes, but I don't like to talk much about it because, on the whole, my life has been so rich in friendships. To go back to your little old lady, I don't think she was a real lady or she wouldn't have made that particular remark. I've heard lots of stories like that. I remember, for instance, being at some big public function.
It certainly seemed to us last night that it was more complicated and more difficult than we thought it was going to be.
A few more points here, and we should be able to close out. We remember Emmett Till. We remember Cheney. We remember the Scottsboro Boys, as they called it. We remember the churches that were bombed then, and your plot to bomb churches even today.
I feel like we as mothers who have lost daughters are so heartbroken, and it's so hard to lose a child and not have the opportunity to...
Will have a different picture. You can create any picture you like. Think about it. If I say I'm doing a show naked, people will picture me nude in front of a microphone.
But often the familiar senses. To the sound, the smell, to the touch, to the taste. And welcome this crystal. Yes, it may be one that you already guardian, that you already keep. It may be one that will come very shortly into your reality. Or it may forever be in this world of other, this world between. It may be a crystal of other level, in the more real of your meditation, of your inner world, of your underworld, of your worlds of other.
The other thing is that there are many reasons why
being promiscuous can sometimes actually enhance your reproductive fitness, if you will. And this is true for females as well as males.
How so?
For example, there are these tribes in South America and New Guinea that believe in something called partible paternity. This is the idea that a baby has more than one father, is actually a kind of spermic quilt, if you will. And women in these cultures, they often, while they're pregnant, they'll take on multiple lovers, and each of those lovers is assumed to be a father to the child and is expected to act accordingly, to bring gifts to the child, to protect the child. And studies that have been done have shown that children of mothers who had taken lovers during pregnancy had a higher rate of survival than children of mothers who just had one man.
Then Ninsen, the mother of Gilgamesh, extinguished the incense, and she called to Enkidu with this exhortation: "Strong Enkidu, you are not the child of my body, but I will receive you as my adopted son. You are my other child, like the foundlings they bring to the temple. Serve Gilgamesh as a foundling serves the temple and the priestess who reared him. In the presence of my women, my votaries and hierophants, I declare it." Then she placed the amulet for a pledge round his neck, and she said to him, "I entrust my son to you. Bring him back to me safely."
That blonde guy who's always on the exercycle at the health club, you know, he's just really handsome.
I wouldn't know.
You know, just admitting a man is handsome doesn't necessarily make you a homosexual.
It doesn't help.
Cut.
If you were to take kind of a cross-section of all the people that we teach in England, and I mean, there are these certainly these archetypes, and the archetypes present their own sets of, you know, dynamic problems in each class, and each class learns at a different pace based on the archetypes and where we happen to be training. But in Scandinavia, there seems to be just a tremendous openness to this, and they have, if you're looking for, you know, a particular race of people that have a propensity for this, it would certainly be here. And they seem to be learning, you know, despite this morphic resonance concept of the collective unconscious and everyone learning so much faster now, because it's no longer just a small cell of intelligence community folks that learn how to do this. We have, you know, based on what my former colleagues are training and what I'm training, we trained 3,200 people last year. That's, you know, the morphic resonance, the pool of information now that's welling up is just creating this tremendous spin, and people are learning this so much faster than they ever did before.
Thank you all. Thank you. And hello, New York. Hello, New York, and thank you. Yeah. Okay. It's been a little while. It's been a little while since I've been here, and a couple of things have happened in that time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore.
And, but it, even looking at that cross-sectionally, as I said, when you look at what these people are doing, they are just head and shoulders above the rest of the world in what they're capable of doing in literally 6 days, 6 days' time of learning this.
Well, of course, I have my own pet theory about it.
Every time we come here, there'll end up being a mother, daughter, you know, father, you know, son. I mean, just the whole family brings in. They don't just take it, you know, one person out of it. It's the entire family element comes in just to learn this because the belief structure is here for it.
Your desire. Satyananda, who raises two thrones in tranquility. Kali Pada Guharoy, whose yoga drops before the void. Shivananda, who touches the breast and says, Om. Sri Mata Krishna Ji of Vrindavan, who says, take for your guru. William Blake, the invisible father of English visions. Sri Rama Krishna, master of ecstasy, eyes half closed, who only cries for his mother. Chaitanya, arms upraised, singing and dancing his own praise. Merciful Shango, judging our bodies. Durgama, covered with blood, destroyer of battlefield illusions. Million-faced Tathagata, gone past suffering. Preserver Hare Krishna, returning in the age of pain. Sacred Heart, my Christ acceptable. Allah, the compassionate one. Yahweh, righteous one. All knowledge, princes of earth, man, all ancient seraphim of heavenly desire, devas, yogis, and holy men, I chant to, come to my lone presence into this vortex named Kansas. I lift my voice aloud, make mantra of American language now.
I only have about a minute.
What it does, certainly, is that it has a tendency, it does have a tendency to cause people to turn back and reflect on organized religion, because it is, it's something that's transpersonal, and it's transforming of the individual, and it's empowering of the individual, and allows them to understand their significance and yet insignificance to the matrix of all creation. They truly develop this new spiritual awareness, if you will, that they don't normally have when they walk into the class, and as well an ecological awareness. And it's not an ecological awareness that's just centered on this planet. It becomes it transposes. It becomes something that's sort of an ecological awareness that attaches itself to the matrix of all creation.
Called Sunrise, a story of two humans. This song of the man and his wife is of no place. You might hear it anywhere, at any time. They don't have a name. But you experience every idea, every emotion that visits them. He had George O'Brien's shoes weighted with 20 pounds of lead to give the actor a more threatening presence. Now was called a cerebral director by his Hollywood peers because he demanded that his actors fully understand the mind of their character. He said, "I talk to an actor what he should be thinking rather than what he should be doing." Is the director's sketching pencil. It should be as mobile as possible to catch every fleeting moment. It must whirl and peep and move from place to place as swiftly as thought itself. Later in their journey, the broken couple is reunited. Fear and guilt fade away. They become invulnerable. Nothing can harm them anymore. Not even the city's hustle and bustle. Magically, subjective perceptions take on an objective reality. A superimposition could serve as an inner vision or an inner monologue. What Murnau is projecting onto the environment is their dream, their common dream. At least for a brief moment.
So I was talking about the four steps of changes that could very believably occur that could create, the basic changeover from what we have now, which is, of course, a virtual reality view, whether it's experienced personally or personal viewpoint of the world or personal viewpoint of the big W world. I'll describe those three in a minute. The basic theory could go as follows, that we're having a dimensional shift. That's a concept most people agree on, dimensions. It's not so much that we're moving out of this dimension as our ability to be conscious, as consciousness is an extension of the point of spirit or soul/spirit that we all are. At this kind of way, let's put it that way. So we're going to try not to use time and space words too much. Obviously, they're embedded in by degree in almost everything I'm saying, most all the verbs and the nouns and so forth. But we'll at least put a conscious effort towards using less time-space-specific words. Or if I do, we'll amend them as we go. So it's a matter of the consciousness, which is a projection, a tool, a vehicle, an intermediary of our soul, spirit, being. Soul being female, spirit, the masculine element, or yin-yang, or two things. Because the time-space world is one of polarity, operating under certain laws together, creating both a sense of oneness and an ability to achieve real oneness or transcendence from this less real world of duality.
And they walk out, hovering about 3 feet off the ground when they come out of these. And that was a very difficult thing for me to have to endure. That was my whole complaint about the process, was that I was an airborne ranger company commander. I was, very much caught up in my lifestyle of living, of doing those kinds of things, and I had no lexicon to support anything that dealt with paranormal phenomena.
Not recognizing me, and was quite embarrassed to discover who I was, and said, "Well, I thought you were a Republican. You see, this was a public function where you had to wear a black tie, and I owned one, and I had it on."
Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a fuck. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right? We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right? Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out.
Viewer advisory. Please be advised that I am very regretful. I can't play a lot more expletives for you, thus recreating the experience human that you are familiar with, and instead have to give you a child-proofed, in quotes, experience of a version of real human life instead, for absolutely no possible reason anyone could ever think of. We here at WZBC are sorry about this. Try to sneak a few in, however. Everybody's doing it.
But that sort of thing amused me, of course. What didn't amuse me was, in years around the First World War and afterwards, I was pretty well dropped by a good many friends, at least for quite a while. And I was on a blacklist in colleges, churches, all sorts of places.
one for me, for the both of us. But what a man is he's a customer that maybe does a bit of squawking when it's hurting most, but he gets up and goes on in after it again. Had a buddy once who said, you gotta expect losses. Well, now, that's easy to say when you're not hurting from a loss so bad. All you really want to say is, I've had it, and pull those covers over your head. But it's a fact you do. It's a fact you blessed well better expect them, because they'll come. Those losses will come sure as there's no week without a Monday. And what a man better do is set himself up to expect them. And what he better do once he's done that is set up the steam and cussedness to head on in and try it again.
So right now, what I do is what feels good to me. And
I agree with it totally.
Yeah.
I think that there is no true symmetry, because every, you know, the other side has some variation in it, right? So, I mean, in other words, symmetry would suggest equality, but there is no true, I mean, no really true equality. That's what they want it to be, but it won't be. It will never be like that.
Well, that's
also,
right.
Apparently, not according to me, because I was only making a statement based on that I heard Terrence speak of it, but they also, along with their attempt to want things to be predictably symmetrical, or however you want to describe it, they also, at the same time, want to be able to show an inherent factor of randomness, and Terrence has described how he interprets
he calls it
the reality, however you want to say it, is that there is no there is no true randomness.
I had no belief structure to hang any of this on.
This Saturday at the Hatchell, keep an eye out for the propaganda barge put forth by the Church of Euthanasia. Media virus injectors. You might want to gather at the Food Not Bombs place. If you want to get in on some of the viral infection. Viral infection of media being the place of entry into the place of entry into the place. That's three things, isn't it? I got it. You get it?
I would agree with that. But you couldn't say what there is.
All these things are true, which I think is probably the best way.
All right.
One question I wanted to have about, does the research into these superconductive materials, would those materials apply to allowing your machine or the human machine to become more efficient in some way?
Oh, sure. That's the next stage, is to make a superconducting end machine. But that's quite a project, and it's beyond my capacity at the present time. So we're at the first ladder. When the machines are built that are going to run Los Angeles, or the first spaceship, those will be superconducting machines, probably.
What are materials that are superconductive? Non-metallic?
Well, you see, what you use the superconduction for is to create an intense magnetic field. You can do that with what they call niobium tin wire. It's a special wire you wind coils with, and at, I don't know, a low temperature, not quite 4 degrees Kelvin, maybe 6 or 8, this wire, or maybe higher than that, maybe 20, this wire becomes superconducting and has zero resistance. And then you put a current in the wire and connect the wire to itself, and the current keeps circulating, and you have a permanent magnet of intense strength. Now, that's the superconducting magnet part. Now, there's another part of an end machine, the rotor itself, which conducts the electricity. And you could make that superconducting too, but there's a trouble with getting the electricity off of it because you have a sliding contact using liquid metals, and at low temperatures they'd freeze solid. So I don't know whether you could make a superconducting rotor and get the current out of it. It's a heck of a problem, and it's going to take a lot of R&D to do that. Right now, the superconductivity relates to the creation of the magnetic field in the machine, and you're not making the rotor itself superconducting, because if it was, it would freeze up the liquid metal in there. So that's how it works.
All of a sudden I get shot in the head and I have this bleed over of data coming in, and so it became a very difficult thing for me to have to contend with.
One way they contain a plasmic field in the basic flying saucer technology is by generating a field around the field of an analog of the field itself. So they basically take the position of the higher mind of the thing, or the soul of the thing, that which names it. And as they say the name, the thing has a place which can be a function in the shadow of real reality around here, and off you go.
In sunrise, love and death are intertwined like day and night. But in seventh heaven, love negated death itself. Both films star Janet Gaynor, who commuted between the two sets, working with Murnau during the day and with Borzaghi at night. She is a street angel. She's saved by Charles Farrell, a street sweeper. Reluctantly, he takes her to his lofty garret above the city. He works in the sewers of Paris, but insists that he lives near the stars. Borzaghi was not a highly educated man, let alone an art historian like Murnau. His approach to the medium was more instinctive. He was a maestro of the pantomime. What inspired him was the sheer power of emotions. This was the great mystery that elevated his melodramas into pure songs of love. Directed by Borzaghi, Janet Gaynor and Charles Farrell formed a unique couple, at once vibrant with sexual passion and wrapped in a mystical aura. Their romance would lift them from the physical to the spiritual.
Thought I was going insane with it. Now, if you grow up with the ability, it's like growing up, with an extra thumb on your hand. You know how to use it. You just learn how to use it. You don't know what it's like not to have it. So you're a natural with it. But if you go down and get something surgically placed onto your hand, an extra thumb, then it becomes something that gouges you in the eye and gets slammed in the door constantly. And the same was true of me with this ability. But the remote viewing unit that I went to when I was recruited out of another special access program to go there, what it did for me was it trained me to harness this ability. That and many, many other wonderful things. It trained me to harness this ability. So it's not something unique to me. All of us have it. And all I'm doing is taking now the protocols and the structure of remote viewing that was provided to me, that I was taught, that showed me how to take anybody, the layperson, if they have any kind of a belief structure at all that says, I believe in something beyond the physical. That's what you have in order to develop a propensity for this.
Raise them. And I feel very sorry for her that she has a son that has ruined so many people's lives and destroyed so many young women.
Damn, bomb them! Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people?
Beyond success and abundance, prosperity awaits. It can be the most elusive of the three. Yet it is prosperity that can lift achievement to success and catapult it to abundance. It is prosperity that can fill that emptiness you still feel amid all that is or is supposed to be so right. It is prosperity that can feed that hunger that haunts you, even as life is, or is supposed to be, so good. It is time to prosper. Be trustworthy and trust. That is where it starts. Awaken the artist, painter, poet, musician, or philosopher within you, as you also awaken the artisan, disciplined with conviction, focused with intensity, patient with humility, and practiced. That is how prosperity unfolds. Give of the success you know and allow the abundance you have to flow, spilling and splashing into your world, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Give of the freedom that you have to inspire greater freedom and self-determination in you and in others. That is how prosperity gains force. Now stand upon your love, replete with will. Stand within your will, complete with love. Stand as one. Stand with resolve. I use my success and abundance for more than making a living. I use these of me to make a life. To make a life worth living. Prosperity can flow. Catapulting success. Filling the emptiness. Sating the hunger. And lifting you transcendently. Prosperity waits. The journey never ends. Seven.
I'm amazed that science appears not to have learned some very fundamental facts of how its own house should be conducted.
Radio is... Wait, what's your name?
You're going out of turn.
Fuck that. You have the gun. You know all the shit about me. Give me something.
Hey, get up if you want. I don't care.
How?
See? That was easy. Radio, Howard, is like the theater of the mind. The audience can't see you, so you can create just about anything for them to picture. I can be bald, fat, white, ugly, Hispanic, anything. It doesn't matter. Everyone who listens will have a different picture. You can create any picture you like. Think about it. If I say I'm doing the show naked, people will picture me nude in front of a microphone. You used to do that in New York.
Right. Nude night. Every Friday night.
Not so much having to do with the difficulty of the strange equipment, or even that we're in a space which we're not used to being in.
I was sorrier for my wife than myself, and without her, I couldn't have done anything in life. And she was an awfully good sport. However, I don't want you to think that lasted too long, at least not for the people I cared anything about.
In your book, Mr. Chairman, Ladies and Gentlemen, which is a book you wrote about the art of public speaking, you related some of your experiences. You said that for the most part, audiences were polite and courteous, but that there were a few notable exceptions. Can you tell me what one or two of those exceptions were?
Well, this gives me a chance to say something for the American audience in general. And in political campaigns, America is a country, by and large, of great courtesy to speakers in such campaigns. If you can get a chance to begin to talk to an audience, it'll usually listen. The chief exception, perhaps, was the big Townsend Plan convention back in 1936 in Cleveland, Ohio. Terribly hot weather in that great city auditorium.
Vietnam, spaceless. How many Americans have ever visited that country? Who can say which language is spoken there, or what industries might exist, or even what the country looks like? We do not care. We are not interested in the Vietnamese. If we were to fight a war with the inhabitants of the planet of Mars, there would be more emotional participation by the people of America than there is even now for our share of the war in Vietnam.
WZBC in Newton. In a world of men looking for their balls, but not knowing that they are doing that, we at least can say we are looking for our balls. And we can say that. What do you think about that? Out of Newton, home of the Fig Newton, it's square with slightly rounded edges, as you probably know. But that's about it. It's as far as we're going with the rounded sides. What do you think we are? Faggots? 90.3 in the FM, no commercial potential, part 2, an excellent format, excellent programming format, avant-garde, non-analog, ionic field ambience, that which many people say does not exist. And many other people don't even say that. What do you say about that?
Well, I'm not so sure of that. I'm not so sure.
Oh, here's Melville now.
I took the liberty.
That's all right, Mr. Melville. You're the man I want to see. You're familiar with the water problems on board, Dr. Ambler tells me.
Yes, sir, I am.
An evaporator. That's what we need. You're...
said the worst kind of despair is the despair that does not know itself as despair, that is not conscious of itself. And which is better, to be a drowning man clutching at straws, a man on a dangerous journey standing at the edge of an abyss, or to be alive and well and living in Glendale? Did you ever see the movie The Invisible Man, based on the book by H.G. Wells? Whenever the Invisible Man wanted to appear among people, he had to bandage his face, put on clothes, and wear gloves over his invisible hands. Only then could people see him. And what do people see? What do you reveal to them when they talk and they look at you? But more important, what's inside you? An animal, one that hasn't been domesticated in particular, is comfortable with itself. It doesn't experience doubt, conflict, angst, depression. It doesn't question the meaning of its life. It just lives from day to day. If animals recorded their histories, what would they write? Migrated again. Foraged for food. Has it ever occurred to you that animals don't realize they have names? A lion doesn't think, I'm a lion. There's a tiger. I think I'll eat that gazelle. Uh-oh, here comes an elephant. The use of language is one of the things that sets us apart from the animals, of course. Animals are, for the most part, mute. But we talk. We talk all the time. We are constantly talking to each other, carrying on dialogues. And now, how do you like all those television discussion programs which suggest that there are two sides to every question? And now, this evening's guests. On my left, the torturer. On my right, the victim. Two points of view. Gentlemen? Gentlemen? Church last Sunday. Well, it's not exactly a church. It's more of a club of very nice guitar-playing friends eager to meet new people and serve noble causes. You know, the effort to save the whales, to support migrant farm workers, to eliminate nuclear weapons, to back the forces struggling against apartheid in South Africa, to free political prisoners in totalitarian states, to cut off aid to the Contras. Last Sunday, we sat in the pews discussing the nagging problems of interpersonal relationships between men and women, and we sang a hymn and a protest song. But I felt the absence of something. There was something missing. In a remote province of Russia, a strange sect emerged at the turn of the century called the Hole Worshippers. These peasants, having lost their faith in God, would drill a hole in the wall of their huts and pray to it. They considered the hole sacred. Their idea was to face the emptiness, the void, the godlessness of the universe, while at the same time maintaining the ethical principles of religious faith. They prayed to their holes, and they continued to live spiritual, humane lives. I think that here in the latter part of the 20th century, it makes real sense. So I brought a drill with me and some wood, and I'm going to drill my own hole to worship.
wondrous void, eternal nothingness, I offer myself so that you might cast your inscrutable dear silence upon me. O lustrous whole, symbol of the greater glory of absence, darkness, and mystery beyond the realm of human thought, let me ask for your grace and forgiveness in the knowledge that I shall serve you all the days of my meaningless life.
Rips them apart. But as Borzage once stated, souls are made great through love and adversity. Even when he's blinded in the trenches, the lovers remain in daily telepathic communication.
We shouldn't believe everything that comes along the pike.
Well, I'm surprised you're surprised.
It's
comfortable. It's cozy in the university.
It is. It's very cozy because the way it works is the government gives money to universities. It's really not the military-industrial complex that you spoke of earlier. It's the academic government complex, I would say.
Wait a minute. Are you saying to me, Dr.
But you weren't naked, were you? That doesn't matter. If you picture me nude, then I was. The story I told about running out of the building to my car was just another picture I painted for the audience. If I told them the truth, that I needed to change for cigarettes, and I forgot about the music for a minute, they wouldn't get it. It would make me sound too normal, I guess. Plus, if someone pictures me as a non-smoker, I just shot their image of me. Get it? Just more of a skit.
It's more to this job than I ever imagined. I mean, most people picture DJs just hanging out, playing records all day, not really working, making a lot of money.
Well, there's a little bit more to it than that, but as a fellow jock said to me once, sure beats working for a living.
Improvement is accomplished by developing the ability to read for thoughts, and by number 4, using your hand as a pacer. The hand as pacer will reduce unnecessary regressions, help you to develop smooth and uninterrupted eye movements, and increase your reading speed directly.
know you can't prove this, nor can I.
Okay.
Are you saying to me that the normal fossil fuel people, or the gas companies, that they have no hand in this, that they aren't paying off people?
Let me say this.
Shut up, Mr. Melville. We've got to get the salt out of the water.
I've got the thing working already, Mr. DeLong.
Why didn't you tell me that, Dr. Ambler?
Well, I've given you my share of bad news for today.
Bad news?
The trouble is, sir, it burns coal. You got to boil the water, you know.
And not have the opportunity to love them and raise them. And I feel very sorry for her that she has a son that has ruined so many people's lives and destroyed so many young women. And I would imagine the anguish she's going through now as he's confessing to all these murders and the heartbreak that she has to live with.
I find myself, even now when I'm in a crowd, looking for her.
Well, first of all, it was unexpected because those things don't happen to you. They happen to everybody else. You read about them in the paper. They happen in New York City. They don't happen in Ellensburg, Washington. Well, we received a phone call from the university that my daughter was missing, that she hadn't come home. She was a straight-A student, the type of child who just wouldn't normally do those kinds of things. For her not to come home from a meeting was just not right. She just wouldn't do that kind of thing. She just wouldn't.
She was easily frightened by stories of things happening to other young girls.
No one paid any attention to her. It was just written off as a runaway. The interesting thing is that if you look at the state of Washington, there had been 12, 14 of these occurrences in a six-month period.
I don't think anyone, you know, correlated all these missing girls until we bought an ad in the paper. You know, help us find our daughter. We know something has happened.
Yeah, you couldn't say or do any more than we did, I don't think.
For a long time, that bothered me. I thought perhaps something in our training, you know, could have helped her in that situation, but I wouldn't have wanted her any other way.
And I think that you have to have a society that says that you can conduct yourself in this fashion and feel reasonably safe.
That blonde guy who's always on the exercise cycle at the health club?
I don't think so.
No, you know, he's really handsome with those...
Elena, I really don't pay much attention to men's faces.
You can't find beauty in a man?
No. I find them repugnant and unappealing.
Hey.
To wit. No, Anne and I were just discussing whether or not I could admit a man as attractive.
Mm. Oh, you know, I'll tell you who's an attractive man. George Will.
Really?
Yeah, he has a clean look, scrubbed and shampooed.
He's smart.
No, I don't find him all that bright.
Thank you.
seraphim of heavenly desire, devas, yogis, and holy men, I chant too. Come to my lone presence into this vortex named Kansas. I lift my voice aloud, make mantra of American language now. I here declare the end of the war. Let the states tremble. Let the nation weep. Let Congress legislate its own delight. Let the president execute his own desire. This act done by my own voice, published to my own senses, blissfully received by my own form, approved with pleasure by my sensations, manifestation of my very thought, accomplished in my own imagination, all realms within my consciousness fulfilled 60 miles from Wichita, near El Dorado, the Golden One, in chill earthly mist, houseless brown farmland plains rolling heavenward in every direction, one midwinter afternoon Sunday called the Day of the Lord. Pure spring water gathered in one tower where Florence is set on a hill. Stop for gas and tea.
It's just to have a belief structure that says, I accept that there is something beyond the physical. If you can do that, honestly, if you can do that, then you will step forward and you can be given these protocols and you can learn to be a remote viewer.
All right,
of light or streak of light or beam of light or energy source that came from the ground to Flight 800. You know, just plain old gumshoe work, interviewing people, looking at the site, doing other things in conference with CBS to try to draw some conclusions on this. And I must say, not CBS at this juncture, but the CBS producer who was hiring us to do this. Now, if anybody has a map of Long Island, it would probably help them if they broke it out and kind of looked at it or brought out an atlas to kind of understand the lay of the land here. Somewhere, probably about 10 miles, and I don't have a map, so I'm kind of pulling this out of memory. I think it's about 10 miles due east of a straight line. If you were to draw a straight line from Port Jefferson Station to, I think, Fire Island National Seashore, from that point there. 10 miles to the east is Brookhaven National Labs. Adjoining and sharing the fence line with Brookhaven National Labs is a top-secret naval weapons test facility. It's an air weapons test facility. There are hangars that during the day have nothing there, but during the evening, then the activity begins. And if you think that this is not a significant area, if you look just up off the Hamptons, actually a side stroke distance from like Greenport and Montauk, which is everyone is familiar with, then we also have Plum Island out there, which is where we do a lot of really unique testing of chemical and biological weapons on or agents on animals. So all of this centered around this particular area. Off of, directly to the southeast off of Brookhaven National Labs are a number of military operational areas, and for pilots and sailors and other folks that have sectionals that look at those, they know that those are areas that in order to transit through those areas, either in the air or on the water, you have to call in a certain frequency and get permission to do that. Well, none of that's ever been brought up in any of the reports that's been presented. The TWA Flight 800 report that was prepared and given to all the people of the world that went, you know, by the NTSB, went down and talked about the exploding of the fuel tanks, but it never said anything about the fact that these military operational areas, which is where they test weapons or conduct maneuvers or do other things in those areas, but when those areas are hot and they are live, they have to notify the FAA at JFK that they are, in fact, hot and live. That also goes to flight following it provided at Boston. All of that stuff is done. Now, I saw the message that went from the Department of the Navy to the JFK, and it stated that those operational areas would be hot. There are actually, I think, seven of them. I may be mistaken. Seven, and four of them were joined together into one large military operational area that had a long axis, and that operational area was codenamed Tango Billy in the message to the FAA. When that happens, the FAA establishes a flight safety corridor. Now, you ever heard this before?
No, I've never heard it.
Okay, most folks haven't. The FAA establishes a flight safety corridor, which runs basically a straight line from somewhere on the eastern shore of New Jersey, around Lakewood or around the Highlands or something like that. There's another city. There's a VOR right there on that eastern shore. That VOR, the commercial flight traffic coming out of JFK, they're headed to the European continent, will turn around. They'll basically head southeast, pick up the VOR after they gain altitude, and they will fly an outbound radio from that VOR, radio navigation technique, into flight corridor Betty, which requires them to stay at a certain speed, at a certain altitude, and they fly flight corridor Betty straight to the Nantucket VOR, where they then break off. Flight following is provided via radar from Boston. They break off and they head for the European theater at that juncture. Now, that's traffic stacked, traffic coming in to JFK and leaving JFK come through flight corridor Betty. Personally interviewed at least 13 pilots that confirmed that. Commercial pilots, not private. Commercial pilots who had flown flight corridor Betty. So that's the stage. Also, in the same message, the Department of the Navy told JFK that there would be a P-3 Orion. Now, we're unsure whether it was an Orion or Araya. An Araya is a telemetry monitoring aircraft that monitors the reentry of multiple launch reentry vehicles, so, you know, MIRVs, and we're not real sure whether that's what it was or an Orion. The message said an Orion, which is a subfinder, and it was going to be orbiting Tango Billy. It would be, and it was, had a time window established that was actually 2 hours. All prior to the scheduled takeoff of TWA Flight 800, and would have consisted or existed about 2 hours after TWA would have departed or cleared Tango Billy. Flight Corridor Betty. This aircraft, so stated in the message, was going to be providing observation from the surface to flight level 10,000, from the surface of the water up to flight level 10,000. One has to ask themselves at this juncture that the first statement by the Department of the Navy was that there was no military operation or exercise ongoing. If that's the case, why was Tango Billy active? Why was Betty active? And why was there a P-3 Orion with 29 sonar buoys in the water in Tango Billy? Why was it circling, providing observation from the surface to flight level 10,000? What was it looking at? It was to be fired from the decks of the USS Normandy, the Aegis class missile frigate. The drone Tomahawk would have climbed altitude and would have entered Tango Billy, where something was supposed to happen to it. When this thing that was supposed to happen to it, which I'll address in a moment, it would have then plummeted into the sea, into those military operational areas. The 29 sonar buoys would have triangulated the location of this splashdown, would have told the P-3 Orion, who would have taken the data and sent it to another piece of the puzzle, which we got this from interviews. We did not get this from any hard copy message traffic. So consider the source. And that was that there were two UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters with Naval SEALs on board that were circling Tango Billy as well. That when this missile splashed down into Tango Billy, that the P-3 Orion would have radioed the Black Hawks that this is the location of the missile. The SEALs would have gone out. They're in their UDT, you know, their scuba gear, would have gone out, recovered this missile, would have been brought back, and then it would have been dissected either on the decks of the Normandy, you know, in some lab someplace. And the idea was to try to find out how they can better harden their missile against the device that brought it down. Now, let's address the device that brought it down. The device that brought it down, which we were led to based on the evidence provided by the remote viewers, the pieces of the puzzle that we didn't consider as, you know, as fact, and we didn't consider it as an end-all, be-all sort of piece of information. We used it as evidence that we then used to put together this abductive process of going out and trying to interview and put together other pieces of the puzzle that led us to these conclusions.
There was a high-powered microwave weapon being tested by Phillips Labs at Brookhaven National Laboratories. And that directed energy weapon was being built in support of the Strategic Defense Initiative. You can't, unless they've extracted it now because of the, I've made this comment several times, so they may have taken it off. But they have a website, and on the website you can actually look at their plan for when they're going to test the weapon, and they were testing the weapon during the time that Flight 800 was brought down. This particular weapon produces 1.4 gigawatts, that's billion watts of power, in a concentrated stream of electrons guided by a self-generated electromagnetic field. Now, that weapon was designed to kill other weaponry using an electromagnetic pulse effect, which destroys all analog circuitry. This particular weapon, being built in support of the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, was targeting the drone Tomahawk missile, which it was supposed to shoot at. It would have killed it with EMP. EMP would have brought it into the water. They would have pulled it out. And, of course, then both the Tomahawk manufacturer and the weapons manufacturer of the high-powered microwave weapon both benefit from the analysis, as does the Department of Defense, because they're going to look at how do we harden the missile to protect it against EMP effect. And then, of course, the weapons manufacturer is going to look at the HPM, or directed energy weapon. They're going to look at the DEW and see how do we need to tweak this thing so that it better kills anything that's been hardened. So that was the scenario that was supposed to take place. The missile was fired from the decks of the Normandy. It did climb up. That's why people saw this flame raising up out of the sea. That's why the Cabot photo exists, which went in the analysis looked like a Tomahawk missile on its way down. Indeed, it was. As we understand it, if this scenario is true, then the Tomahawk missile was on its way down while Flight 800 was on its way down in flames, because what the drone Tomahawk was not struck by the weapon. Flight 800 was struck by the weapon. And here's how we understand what happened. Flight 800 departs, comes in low, slow, and late off into Tango, into rather Flight Corridor Betty, and enters the gun target line. I mean, they could not have repeated this accident if they really tried, I don't think. You have Flight 800 coming in right at the time that the drone Tomahawk is climbing to altitude, and TWA enters the 800, Flight 800 enters the gun target line at precisely the same moment, or very close to it, that the drone Tomahawk is supposed to be engaged by the directed energy weapon from Brookhaven National Labs. The weapon, we are uncertain as to what the targeting mechanism is, whether it was an automated acquire and fire, or whether it was an individual sitting there reading a radar scope and, you know, trying to draw a conclusion about what the target was and thinking he had the right target or she had the right target, pushes the button and fires the directed energy weapon, which strikes TWA Flight 800 on the left side of the aircraft in the area of the main fuel tanks, which it would have done because it is looking for the center of mass of the target. Now, there are all sorts of pieces of information that came out of investigations and investigating and talking to the Suffolk County Medical Examiner and agents of that particular agency, people that worked there, ambulance drivers, all people in the area, everything we did. There were several months worth of investigation that went along with this, where we concluded that, based on the information given to us, that there were flight attendants that had pieces of metal that were fused to their backs. This came from the medical examiner's office, and that does not happen from an explosion. I mean, this was tissue fused into metal. That comes from something that produces 1.4 billion watts of power.
So I'll be back throwing the basic theory in different expressions as we go. One is a dimensional shift or an ability to perceive a dimension beyond the one we've conventionally been perceiving, one of, say, three dimensions for the sake of brevity, to four or five dimensions, let's say. So instead of just physical objects as the ground of our set, of our world, and theories of metaphysics or reality start to diminish as we move away from physicality towards a so-called invisibleness. So we still have inventions and conceptions like air or electricity or ionic charges, various graspings of energy, moving away from the physical. And so the theory then would be that we're definitely moving into a virtual reality that encompasses an understanding and utilization of the next dimensional grasp of our physical plane, which would include the physical objects and energy which creates them.
You must reduce the number of words you say in your mind as you read. This reduction of subvocalization is accomplished through a special exercise which forces you to read faster than you can say the words in your mind. Keeping these points in mind, let's move on to the exercises you will want to practice each day. You should plan on practicing them at least 30 minutes a day for a period of about... Your reading growth will be directly proportional to your practice. You really want to read and obtain them. It's important that you... respect to both common and difficult. Need is a way of timing yourself program, but you might find it in the exercises to find reading for 5 minutes to warm up. Then you'll be timed.
Maybe it will hold all that he has. Now be with this crystal, in the still, in the silence. patient. Looking more closely. Listening more intently. Be patient. And experience.
So just hold her until she comes down and begins to breathe normally. Talk to her about the experience when she's ready, and remember the positions that were most effective. And lovers, above all, remember this is play, and there are no goals in play. There is only enjoyment.
Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown.
New metaphysics. Your congenial host, Gary Geiserman, right here. world is now 50% longer. Or you might feel slower than it was a while ago. In the FM. Congenial host. I hope you're not brown. Because you're probably not intelligent enough to understand this program. Ideally, you would be white and have many years of education so you can be straight and stress free for your life's obligation work, helping the swarthy people, the dirty people, because these days it's usually the swarthy people, dirty, who are many years educated, 50% longer, or at least because of the extremely over-rich, over-fatted, over-proteinized, possibly even chelated American diet, 50% bigger, able to attract 50% more diseases and growths and twists and kinks. And you are obligated to be a white man, a global corporate stockholding ass effing member of the American global Western masculine world. Just don't call it swarthy, pigment dirtied, or ethnically soiled. Your skin, if not your blood, will tell. And if not, your bones will speak. You will be heard. Even as your chromosomes DNA changing, Earth harmonic resonance raising, 50% longer. Overproteinized, precancerous female extra fatted breasts, emasculated, masculinized self identity, soparized by self-delusional, self-generated fantasies of the female over protonated, extra heavily cholesterolized mammalian breasts. One and one half billion gigawatts of non-materialized reality. Fully Americanized. Happening now, it can be feel generated and felt right now, like the white man's burden, like a skin quilt, a subjugation of the skin, and of course penetration of and into the bodily fluids we've heard so much about. Everyone knows about them now. It's like the rivers of time, of the family of man, of the galaxies of the infinite, the undulating under. Full of excess fat and protein stolen from not you. That's about as precise as we can be about the not you. Since in not naming the other, we lose our identity and sleep on thousands and thousands of times, all through crying and hurt that echoes to the outside. But no one will come and interfere because of an agreement boilerplate around here. Thus, the difficulty with the alien, so-called, not able to touch unidimensionally, a rather large meta zone in surround sensate sound and light. Only smell penetrates to the limbic truth, like animals on all fours, or little babies presumed to be wise in a fake expression of charity no one ever believed. Except the proud parents for a little while, as they too become shareholders in the world dysfunction bank of the dark, the down, and the black. Never to be seen again, except in the cancer wards and the telethons of tuxedoed white corporate shareholders of Equity Earth. Post-capital capitalism, super global corporate capitalism, an icon of irresponsibility of the individual. Now, even without a president. Because our president gets to have penile penetration of the proud career of the other. The brown, fecal, tinted, bent on all fours, ovarian other, whose only crime is to conceive the whole friggin' thing. With your company. I guess domination reality pretty much subsumes most of the major plot lines in the history human dualistic monism around about here, in this particular shadow of reality, as a launching pad for the unification, a world unification title fight. Happening now. It's free. Oh, I forgot. The concept of free has been blowed away. Free freedom. Blowed out of here. But she's a coming back. I personally am bringing it back. It's like little insects in my head lately. Instead of heavy anvils of American industry / family slavery, family business, shareholders in Equity Earth, over 10,000, you can trade on a sailboat in mid-Pacific. You don't even have to get up early. Mid-Atlantic. Scratch the Pacific. Trading in Hawaii, get up real early. Forget about it. Ineffable insects in the head. Too soft. A little too easily dissolvable seeming. Just thoughts in my head. Create reality. Thought feelings, moods in my head. In my chest. Create reality. What's to become of me? I create reality. I just don't want to do it, but that's what's doing now. That's the new game, the new sheriff in town. And that's just it, the new sheriff in town. And I am the man. No capital T, no period at the end, just the man in town, or a woman.
I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. Me? I look at war a little bit differently. To me, war is a lot of prick-waving, okay? Simple thing, that's all it is. War is a whole lot of men standing out in a field waving their pricks at one another. Men are insecure about the size of their dicks, and so they have to kill one another over the idea. That's what all that asshole jock bullshit is all about. That's what all that adolescent macho male posturing and strutting in bars and locker rooms is all about. It's called dick fear. Men are terrified that their pricks are inadequate. Bars and locker rooms is all about. It's called dick fear. Is all about. It's called dick fear. It's called dick fear. Fear. Macho male posturing and bars and locker rooms. It's called dick fear. Men are terrified that their pricks are inadequate, and so they have to compete with one another to feel better about themselves. And since war is the ultimate competition, basically men are killing each other in order to improve their self-esteem. You don't have to be a historian or a political scientist to see the bigger dick foreign policy theory at work. It sounds like this. What? They have bigger dicks? Bomb them! And, of course, the bombs and the rockets and the bullets are all shaped like dicks. It's a subconscious need to project the penis into other people's affairs. It's called fucking with people. Fuck. I'm concerned that whole thing in the Persian Gulf was nothing more than a big prick-waving dick fight. In this particular case, Saddam Hussein had questioned the size of George Bush's dick. And George Bush had been called a wimp for so long. Wimp rhymes with limp. George has been called a wimp for so long that he has to act out his manhood fantasies by sending other people's children to die. Even the name Bush. Even the name Bush is related to the genitals without being the genitals. A bush is a sort of passive secondary sex characteristic. Now, if this man's name had been George Boner, well, he might have felt a little bit better about himself and we wouldn't have had any trouble over there in the first place. This whole country has a manhood problem. Big manhood problem in the USA. You can tell from the language we use. Language always gives you away. What did we do wrong in Vietnam? We pulled out. Not a very manly thing to do, is it? When you're fucking people, you gotta stay in there and fuck them good. Fuck them all the way. Fuck them till the end. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Stay in there and keep fucking them until they're all dead. We left a few women and children alive in Vietnam, and we haven't felt good about ourselves since. That's why in the Persian Gulf, George Bush had to say, "This will not be another Vietnam." He actually used these words. He said, "This time we're going all the way."
Feel like the words which we're shying away from are really rhetoric, just because large numbers of people are not comfortable with, say, a word like imperialism, doesn't mean it's rhetoric. It means we have a job over the long run, which is to find some way to explain what imperialism is. We have no choice but to use the word. The same is true for racism. So rhetoric is only rhetoric if you can't find a way to explain it, to make it make sense.
I find all of this, you know, incredibly constricting and false for us to be able to express who we are. And I think it could be better if we were talking to each other, with the tape machine running, but not the camera running, because it requires us to get into these postures that are incredibly uncomfortable. If that machine were off, you could come and join us on the floor. We could.
The problem is we're making a film, and every time we say, "Okay, now we're ready, we're going to start the film again," it'll be the same thing will happen again. And it seems to me each time we do this, and we're struggling to find the form of what we're doing. And as we sit and we do that, hopefully we're getting better at it, and we're beginning to get an idea of and relaxing and getting to know each other within this context, because this is a context that is going to go out.
I feel like I've learned something in the last day, which is that I now know that I'm going to be uncomfortable through this whole project from beginning to end.
A.M. on July 29th, 1890, at the age of 37 years and 4 months, after he spoke these words,
"I wish I could go home now."
Life left Vincent van Gogh. Life left
now.
American president using the sexual slang of a 13-year-old to describe his foreign policy. If you want to know what happened in the Persian Gulf, just remember the names of the two men who were running that war. Dick Cheney and Colin Powell. Somebody got fucked in the ass.
Until recently, until February of this year, South Vietnam could have fallen, and most of us would not have known nor cared particularly if the territory acquired by the Viet Cong were as big as Brooklyn or as big as the state of Texas.
Yes, I know. Doctor, how much water do you figure it's necessary to consume on board a day?
Well, I'd say not less than 40 gallons, sir.
Well, how much coal will that take?
Nearly 100 pounds, Chief.
100 pounds a day? Why, we can't do it. We simply can't do it.
And miracles is the way things ought to be.